You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
Boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, it is Dan filling in for Silk
and Delatorre.
Corey will be joining us in a bit. He's on a bit of a family vacation, so he's stuck in some traffic. I don't know where. Probably Orlando, based on the way he's described it. Maybe South Florida. Who knows? We'll find out soon. Nick, welcome back from Omaha. A longer trip than I think any of us anticipated. How was you going to make the trip, Dan? No. I don't know if you had planned on any of those trips, to be honest with you.
Yeah, the weekend was good. Got back home, spent time with the wife, and now I'm just watching baseball.
Yeah.
Writing football. I'll be on vacation next weekend. I think I will be coming to you live from St. Augustine, the Casa Monica Hotel, Dan. It has been 1 year.
Happy 1 year, man.
Since you cut up the dance floor.
Somebody had to do it.
Tore it to shreds.
Yep.
I think the fire sprinklers came on because of how hot.
Yeah, how hot I was keeping the dance floor. Yeah, my shoes were on fire.
My goodness.
No, what a lovely wedding. It was great. It's hard to believe it was a year ago. We caught up with Zach and the rest of the gang that was there. Just a great weekend. So congratulations to you and the wife. You got one on the way. The next one, year two, will be looking a little bit different, but excited for you, brother. We'll get into the show, man, because I want to hear about your time over in Omaha. I know last week we talked to you when you were live in Omaha. Gators go 2-2, ultimately finish. Pissed off a lot of FSU fans online when I said this third in the country because they lost after Florida State did. A lot of kebab fans just really kind of upset, Nick. So the Gators,
you don't make the schedule, Dan.
Yeah.
You did not make the tournament schedule.
You know, my justification is nobody thought Florida should be there. Nobody thought that Florida State would lose before, no matter how the schedule panned out, Nick. As far as I know, the way that I watch TV is in chronological order, and FSU was on their plane ride back before Florida was. But Nick, give us the last couple day update in Omaha, and then why don't we just go into to baseball transfer portal after that. The Gators have been hot and heavy in the transfer portal in baseball, so let's do that, Nick.
Yeah, it was funny. So when we walk in, I've been to Omaha a bunch, but when we walk in, I look at the D1 baseball guys and the Baseball America guy there, and I said, hey, do you think you'd see me here? And they said, in February? Yeah. I said, what about April? They're like, no. So what about March and June? They're like, no. So, Florida made a run. It was interesting. Like, I wouldn't say it was a great year, but they made a great run that last month, starting with going up to Athens, taking two or three from Georgia, and then going on the road to Stillwater, going on the road to Clemson. And then again, kind of like just a game of inches. Like if Texas A&M's right fielder isn't 6'6" and doesn't rob a home run in the ninth inning, maybe Florida wins game one. And if you win game one, then you don't have to play. They wouldn't have been tasked with winning four games in 4 days. Four games in 3 days because you had to play a doubleheader again. But it was a fun run down the stretch. Florida is currently getting busy in the transfer portal.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. Gators go. They obviously lose to Texas A&M in the first game. That was a tough one. After that, they go and beat NC State. Then you have a small rain delay. Game gets moved to the next day. And then you put up 15 big runs in the early game. None of that transferred over. Just met a team that was able to beat you, kind of capitalized. Gators did not get a lot of hits with runners in scoring position in that game. Had second and third with multiple no out situations throughout the game. Weren't able to get any done. Got to give a shout out to Jack Caglione. should have been the Golden Spikes winner, but at least a finalist. But he goes to Omaha in what is going to be his last time in a Gator uniform. Gives a very heartfelt speech after the game about his time at the University of Florida. But what a career for him. Brandon Neely, what a last couple of weeks for him and the amount of stress that he put on his arm. But Nick, I know this team is not going to go down as one of the greatest Florida Gators baseball team, but it'll certainly go down as one of the more resilient and definitely one of the more fun stories that we've covered on this show, at least.
Yeah, and I mean, as good as Jack was as a sophomore, just completely took his game to the next level as a junior this year. It's interesting. We kept having the conversation all year long. Is he the best Florida Gator that you've ever covered? And I think for me, it's probably him and Wyatt Langford in terms of batters. And then you've got, you know, Logan Shore, Alex Faedo, mm-hmm. your pitchers. But none of them did it both. And, you know, Jack wasn't an All-American pitcher, but certainly will be an All-American DH or first base whenever those All-American stuff polls and list teams come out. It's really fun to watch. And I think towards the end, I started realizing like, oh man, like time is limited. Cause you know, going into the year, I don't think like, oh, this is Jack's last year. There's 60 plus games left.
Mm-hmm.
But towards the end, you're like, oh man, this is the last time I'm going to see him throw 98 and hit a ball 118 miles an hour in the same game. And I think what you saw towards the end, Clemson's velocity was down. Then in the College World Series, velocity's way down. I think it's just we call it like a dead arm in baseball. It's just like your arm's just tired. You can't really get anything out of it. It's not you're not injured, but things are just tight. It hurts a little bit, and you just can't get the same mechanics and the same velocity that you're used to getting. So it was a pleasure watching him and some of the other guys. I really like Dale Thomas. I know fans love Dale Thomas based on the message board. Miyaki Gator over there, that's his guy in the comments. But yeah, it was a fun team. And I think we won't recognize the team next year based on
right.
what the coaching staff has told me about what they're going to do in the transfer portal. And I think we you know, you can see that starting already. But I think Florida got their NIL right for baseball, Dan.
Okay. That's what I like to hear.
And I think that they are no longer just window shopping in the
good
transfer portal space.
Yeah, we're gonna go over each of those transfers that they got in. I do think it's important to mention the Gators did have five players that entered the transfer portal the other day: Alex Philpott, Riley Whitmer, Robert Satin, Jacob Gomberg, and Blake Brookins. Alex Philpott's probably the name the Gator fans that have followed the team this year have heard the most. Nick, any of those surprises to you? All were freshmen. Alex Philpott, we know that he pitched quite a bit this season, but to any of those names surprising to you?
Let me run through them. So I like John Martinez. He was a third baseman. You know, just kind of behind Dale and Tyler Shelnut and Armando Albert, behind three seniors. Didn't get any playing time this year. I almost hit him going to a football game one time.
Wow. Was just okay.
Scooting on a Saturday in the middle of the road, kind of in and out. So sorry, yeah. John. He committed to FAU already. Hunter Jones pitched a couple times. He's a local guy down from Ocala. Sammy Umau, I thought he was a really good fielder. A little light of a hitter. Grayson Smith, Florida fans, if you watched during the regular season, you saw him a bunch. He had a really nice, like a sinker, really threw a really heavy ball. He's committed to Tulane. That's a really good program, so that's good for him.
They got to bring back those baby blue uniforms, you know?
Yeah. I think they still have them.
Oh, okay, very good.
Those. The ones that Landon Russell just got to Florida and then didn't play much, he ended up having a UCL tear in his thumb and missed a bunch of time. I think that kind of set him back. He would have been a guy that could play infield, outfield, and they pitched him a little bit this year too. Riley Whitmer really didn't pitch much. The three that I think will be interesting to watch is that Blake Brookins, Alex Philpott, and Jacob Gomberg went in with do not contact tags. And I'll be interested to see if they went in and are planning on coming back. And if this is just a way that, you know, you're kind of restructuring counters and roster limits and scholarship numbers.
Can you explain a little bit more about what that might mean to somebody like myself, which wouldn't quite understand what you're talking about?
I think you are
playing. But don't you tip your hand a little bit if you say do not contact?
Well, some guys will go in with do not contact, and you know, let's say someone, a football player from Vanderbilt, goes in with a do not contact on day one, and day three of the transfer portal being open, they commit to Alabama. And you're like, ah, it's a little fishy,
right? Yeah, a little tampering.
But so when you go into the transfer portal, it's a database, so coaches can go in and they can search by school, by name, by state. Search by anything. And your numbers there, your parent, whatever information you put in for your contacts is all there, unless you have that do not contact. Then the coaches cannot call you, which would lead me to believe that they haven't gone anywhere yet. Gomberg is actually recovering from Tommy John surgery. He had to have that, I think, back in February or March. Philpott had a broken hand and just came back and was able to pitch. Threw a little bit at Clemson and then threw in the College World Series. And Blake Brookins is a 6'4", 6'5", left-handed hitting outfielder with some power. He's somebody I thought would fit in. So I'm not ready to say that those three guys are leaving yet, even though they're in the transfer portal.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. All right, let's get through some of these players that the Gators have learned, or that we've learned, that are going to be joining the program this year. Former, and this is something that I've noticed, is that there's been a lot of complaints about the Gators in their midweek games, losing to your Jacksonvilles and your UNFs and your Sanfords, your FSUs, your kind of your smaller programs of the world. Gators went and grabbed a number of players from those schools. So Gators grabbed Samford pitcher Michael Ross, who is the reigning SoCon Pitcher of the Year. Let's see, 6'2", 205 pounds, 3.27 ERA. This past season, originally from Lakeland. Anything that you can share on him? This will be his final year? I'm sorry. He's draft eligible, so he could go.
Yes,
potentially play professionally. But Gators do expect him on campus this year.
Well, it's tough. Like, so with baseball, like Florida has a guy signed, a high school player, Kellen Lindsey, who I was looking at draft projections last night. He's a shortstop, and he's going to get drafted anywhere from like 18 to your Tampa Bay Rays.
I'm a Florida Marlins fan.
Tampa Bay Rays.
Or,
you know, in the compensation rounds, early second round. Like, he's not going to come to campus. But you have to offer those guys. So, or sign those guys.
Well, and then they want the bargaining chip, right?
Both ends,
right? Yeah.
The high school player definitely has that bargaining chip. And then they have it again in 3 years if they go to a D1 school. So Ross had a sensational last 2 years, really. This past year, he had 96 and a third innings, 3.27 ERA. Hitters only hit 240 against him. He punched out 20 or 88 and walked just 21. So that tells me he fills the zone. Throws, strikes. Hello. So this is a situation they had last year where they signed or committed Kelly Austin from UCLA, who they planned on making their closer. And he doesn't get signed or doesn't get drafted. I think what happens there in that situation is he gets past a point where he's like, all right, well, the slot value is not going to be enough for me to sign. I'm going to go to school. And then a school calls a team and says, hey, we can't draft you because the slot value's here and we have this kind of money, but we can offer you $200,000 as an undrafted free agent, which is like the upper end of what we can offer you, and we'll do that. So he ends up signing and going for that money and is playing pro ball now. So that's something to watch. Like, Michael Ross could be a weekend starter, a Saturday, Sunday starter for Florida next year if he makes it to campus. And it'll be interesting. The reason why I was explaining this on our message board, the reason why players don't like to come back for their senior season. NIL money might be good, but it's not MLB good. So in 2019, Florida had a pitcher, high school pitcher, really, really good, drafted third. And the Mets took three straight high school pitchers. And I thought, wow, they're actually going to get this kid to campus because the Mets won't be able to pay all three of these high school arms. And then they drafted seven straight college seniors, including the SEC Player of the Year, Jake Mangum. Jake Mangum signed for $20,000. Because the option when you're a senior and you can't tell somebody, hey, I'm going to go back to school if you don't meet what we're asking, is here's an economy ticket to Mexico, Japan, or Korea, and you can go play in one of their leagues this year.
Right. Or join the enterprise management program.
Because we have your rights for another year. So that's why you see players leave after they're redshirt sophomore, or if they're draft eligible sophomores like Kobe Shelton and Luke Kamen. That's why you see them leave, and that's why they don't come back for their senior year. You just don't have that bargaining chip.
Gotcha. Okay. Cool.
Ross, so what do you lose? Which Ross would lose if he comes to Florida?
What do you put the chances that he makes it to campus? Brandon Connell asked that question.
I don't know. I still have some PTSD with Kelly after Austin last year. So let's give it just a coin flip.
50. Kelly Austin is 3-0 in single A and A+. Right now. So shout out to him. Let's see. Gators also nab in the transfer portal, Jacksonville infielder Jason Nadua. I'm definitely saying that wrong. Jason Nadua. Any thoughts on him?
I think it's just Nadu. Yeah, he's a contact hitter. He's going to get on base. He can run the bases. He can steal. And I think he can play. I'd be interested to see if he can play shortstop. But he's played first, second. I think he can play third a little bit.
Okay.
Kind of a top of the order guy, a traditional top of the order guy, I guess. You know, Florida finished the season with Jack Caglione hitting leadoff, non-traditional leadoff. He's a good fielder. He gets on base. Just a ball player.
Okay. I like to hear it. He is on the ASUN All Freshman team, former Volusia Flagler, St. John's County Player of the Year, number of first team player of the year awards that he got throughout that area. Bartram Trail High School, graduated high school with a 4.0 GPA. So that's pretty cool. Definitely a student of the game, you know, first in, last out type of guy there. Let's see, Nick. The Gators also grab. I just completely lost my list of players here.
Wayne is Tripling, Texas Tech infielder.
Yep, there you go. Thank you.
I knew I had your list.
Yeah.
Tripling was really, really good in high school. It goes out to a guy that a lot of people thought would be drafted in the first four rounds and maybe go. I think he made it pretty clear throughout his draft process that he wanted to go to school and wanted to honor his commitment to Texas Tech. Gets out there, Dan. It's hard to get there. Been there one time.
Yeah.
It is a hard school to get to, out in the middle of nowhere. I think it's in like the little nub of Texas. Very hard to get to. Didn't have a great year, but he's a left-handed hitting infielder. Had a lot of power in high school. I think that will translate again. And somebody I think can play either corner spot for Florida, really.
Okay. Things you like to hear.
A lot of infielders, three infielders, one's infielder, outfielder here. But Florida has currently just Cade Curlin coming back in the infield. Colby Shelton's a draft eligible sophomore. Could go, might come back. Still, he's only a true sophomore, so he has 2 years of that bargaining chip. But yeah, you're gonna see a lot of infielders coming in the portal because Florida, I think, has two middle infielders in the class that could get drafted and leave in the recruiting class. So need to get some guys on campus that can play infield.
Perfect. So the swap for Caleb Douglas is complete.
Player to be named later
The future considerations has been named. The Gators also grabbed Stetson center fielder Kyle Jones. 6 foot, 370 pounds from Athens, Georgia, where he was a two-time state champion. Just looking here, 5 home runs, 32 RBIs, 88 hits, a 355 batting average, was the ASUN Freshman of the Year and third team all ASUN team, and was a unanimous selection to the ASUN all freshman team. Apparently known for his speed on the base paths and his outfield play, stole 23 bases in 2024, which would be more than half of what the Gators stole in all of 2024. So, Nick, what are we thinking here? Somebody said potentially a new leadoff hitter, Brandon Connell. You are on mute, my friend.
Which player are you talking about?
We're talking about Kyle Jones from Stetson, the center fielder, the one that
you said Brandon Connell, okay. And I was like, what?
Brandon Connell said he's going to be the new leadoff hitter. And yes, no. Shout out to Volusia County, the best county in Northeast Florida.
Is that really? Is that true?
No, I don't know. I just said that because, you know, it's not Duval County.
Yeah, Kyle Jones was one of the more intriguing players. I think he's from Athens, Georgia. So when he went in, I thought, man, might be going home. But like you say, some freshman of the year, hit 346. Or I think he finished the season 355. He had 346 in the Tallahassee Regional. Just a really, really good outfielder. I watched him rob a home run in that regional. Gets on base. I think he's a player right away that can come in and might be your starting center fielder next year. With Michael Robertson maybe coming back. He also graduated, Michael Robertson did. So that's it, but a little light hitting. I think he finished the season well, but struggled during the year to hit and has had struggles hitting consistently, getting on base consistently through his time. But yeah, Kyle Jones is a ball player, and you're going to get him for 2 years. It's interesting because people always say it's embarrassing when you lose, you know, on a Tuesday or on a Wednesday. And there's just so much talent in the state of Florida, in the state of Georgia, that these big schools can't get them. And then, like, I see constantly, like, guys from Stetson and FAU and FIU throwing 98 in the eighth inning. And you're like, where the hell did this guy come from? But Kyle Jones is a great example of that. A kid from Georgia ends up at Stetson and is clearly playing above a Sun level. So we'll see how he handles the SEC, but he had an incredible freshman year. And I think he's a guy that you might slot in, as a day one starter next year in center field or left field or right field.
But seems I think so. Center field. And a Rawling Gold Glove finalist was the only freshman to be a finalist for the Rawling Gold Glove Award. So definitely an impressive honor and feat for him. We talked about Landon Stripling. We talked about Justin Nadeau and then Blake Sear from Miami. We talked about a few weeks ago when his commitment was broken live here on Stadium and Gale. So, Nick, what else should we anticipate in the transfer portal before we get to football?
Yeah, Florida, like I said, there's not window shopping this year. So they've got five. I keep wanting to say signed. They have five commitments from these guys. I think we will see probably 10 to 12. Like I don't know what Florida's baseball team will look like. Typically, you don't have this much movement in the transfer portal for Florida. But the schedule is just bad. I always harp on this. The NCAA has really screwed up the transfer portal window. It used to be that the MLB draft was going on during like supers, and you know, I'm covering a super game and somebody yells at Jonathan India before he has an at bat in a game to send Florida to Omaha. Hey, India, you were just drafted sixth overall. I'm like, why are we doing the draft right now? So the MLB's worked with them, but now, the transfer portal for baseball opens during super regionals.
Yeah, pretty.
And I get it. There's only eight teams of 300 that are playing, but those are 16 teams. But those 16 teams, you know, now Florida gets home from Clemson, has to host visitors on Tuesday and Wednesday before they fly to Omaha on Tuesday before they fly to Omaha on Wednesday or Thursday, and then they're out in Omaha and everyone's like hosting. It's just. The schedule is messed up. The calendar is messed up, and they've got to figure out a way because baseball is tricky because you have the draft. You also these guys also go and play summer ball. So I don't know how to make it better, but talking not just to Florida's coaches, but to A&M's coaches and Tennessee's coaches out in Omaha, they're like, this is terrible. Like everyone that we want is visiting other places and doesn't want to wait till we get back to visit us. Cause they're going to the Cape Cod League or the Northwoods League, and they don't have time to wait for us. So it, I think it hurt Florida last year with their run going as long as it did, playing the last game of the year, in some of their transfer portal recruitments. So I'm sure the NCAA will get right on that. They have nothing.
I don't believe so. It doesn't get any better in other sports though, Nick. I was, I saw the other day that the NHL, which plays game 7 tonight, which would be an epic collapse by the Florida Panthers if they lose tonight. I would hate to see it as a guy that grew up a Panthers fan. Obviously my allegiance flies with the Tampa Bay Lightning, who have won 2 Stanley Cups in the last number of years. But they play their Stanley Cup game 7 tonight. They have their draft on Friday and Saturday, and then free agency opens on Monday. So just a tough whirlwind for Barry Zito, the rest of the GMs in the NHL that are still playing right now are trying to prepare for that in Edmonton or in Florida. Well, Nick, any other baseball updates you want to give us? Do want to shout out Jack Caglione. He did set the home run record for the Florida Gators in front of Matt LaPorta, Gator legend Matt LaPorta. That is what Jack Caglione did in just 2.5 years, took Matt LaPorta 4. So would have been incredible to see Jack in his early part of his freshman year. I know coming off injury or off surgery, but really, really cool story for Jack Caglione. Any final farewells or eulogies that you want to give this baseball team before we move on to football?
Yeah, Jack, I think the SEC record for home runs is like 88. And I think it was a Saturday on South's Twitter account extrapolated that out, like what Jack was doing per game home run wise, and if he had played in as many games as the two guys ahead of him on the SEC record list, he would have hit like 121, because he only played in like 25 games his freshman year. He was supposed to redshirt. So yeah, just an incredible player. I'm going through some of these questions. George, there is not another Jack Caglione on Florida's roster for next year. Shucks. And I wouldn't anticipate another Jack Caglione being on Florida's roster, maybe in my lifetime.
Well, definitely not with that attitude, Nick.
That's giving Jack his flowers. Like, he is a very unique player. There's not many guys who are 6'4", 250 pounds. I remember it was Billy Napier throughout the first pitch. I can't remember if it was Jack's freshman or sophomore year, but I go up to Kevin O'Sullivan. I was like, hey, you should probably have Jack go get something in the clubhouse when Billy's around, because they need linebackers, they need tight ends, and he's going to look at number 14 and be like, hey, you want to take a ride over the football facility and let's see if you can play football. Jack's just a one of a kind player. It's unfortunate that the Golden Spikes voters, which I am not, did not think that he is a Golden Spikes worthy player. But yeah, that's just like, who's the next Tim Tebow? Who's the next Percy Harvin? Urban Meyer would have given you 47 names, but I couldn't have given you one. But that's the kind of person we're talking about. Like, there's not, you don't replace Jack.
I wonder if Urban Meyer, when he's trying to recruit free agents to the Jacksonville Jaguars, if he told them that they were going to be the next Percy Harvin. He's got to be, right? The next Tim Tebow. Well, Tim Tebow is a tight end, I guess, on his team. But George asks, he says that Jack Caglione deserves a statue right next to Tim Tebow. I don't know if they would put a baseball statue next to the football Heisman Trophy winners. But, Nick, do you think Caglione deserves some sort of special honor? A statue, probably without the gold glove, probably, or without the golden spikes, probably without the national championship, becomes tough. But what do you think the Gators should do to honor Jack? Or do we just say, hey, Jack, thank you for your honor, your service. We'll watch you in the MLB.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Florida has a golden spikes winner in Mike Zunino.
Over Florida Marlin, our Miami Marlin and Tampa Bay Rays great Mike Zunino.
Did Mike play for Florida?
Barely.
And he doesn't have, you know, a statue. I think that's just something that, you know, we say on social media, build the statue. But no, I don't know why you would build a statue. They have a plaque for LaPorta. They have a plaque for all of the Golden Spikes finalists, for all of the winners that you can see at the ballpark. Jack will probably get one of those, but I think I like how exclusive the Ring of Honor is at Florida. And I get it. Like, if Percy Harvin doesn't qualify for the Ring of Honor at Florida, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. That like Percy Harvin was a generational player, but you didn't meet the very tough criteria to get into that. I like that exclusivity. And if you start bending things for it, I think it takes away some of that. But also football, baseball just doesn't have that stuff. They don't have a ring of honor. They don't have a statue.
Nick, I correct you often on the show. It's time for me to correct myself here. Mike Zunino never did go to the Marlins. I thought that he was there for a little while. He was with the Cleveland Indians, or was at least. I was wrong.
Mariners.
No, Indians, he's retired Braves. Now. He is retired now as of the 6th of this year. So congratulations. Finished his career with the Guardians in Cleveland. Matt Dendecker finished his career with the Miami Marlins. Baseball needs a ring of honor, probably something that they could do. But for now, we will put a rest to a season that we thought would end 4 weeks ago. So really cool to watch, really cool to cheer them on. And you can tell all your Florida State fans again that Florida finished third in the country while Florida State finished.
They played hours longer than Florida State.
I mean, they were probably halfway through their charter flight home.
I think Florida stayed in a whole other day. They stayed an extra day in Omaha.
Florida State did?
Florida did.
Good. If they go to the casino, what do you think? What did they do the extra day?
If FSU flew out after their game, Florida stayed after.
I can see that. Probably got lit. You know what I mean?
Having gone to the casino several times, as teams are eliminated and no longer have games, or if you're Texas A&M and you had 2 days off, you run into people at the bar who aren't worried about being hungover the next day because they don't have games to play. So I imagine Florida enjoyed the rest of the time they had with their teammates in beautiful, wonderful, pristine Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah, I mean, maybe
or Council Bluffs, Iowa.
Yeah, maybe they made it over to Council Bluffs. The Casamigos was flowing. I've heard some stories about some NIL deals that these guys have and, you know, some of the guys on Florida State. So the Casamigos was flowing. The Jack Daniels was flowing. And hopefully a couple of 21s at the old Harris Casino there in Council Bluffs, Iowa. George wants Florida to build a statue of Jack Caglione on a horse that's rising up. Jack's holding a baseball bat and a dragon on his feet, at his feet. I don't know if that's going to happen, but thanks everybody for tuning in, watching, and hearing about this baseball team. I know it's not everybody's favorite subject. It's obviously one of Nick's favorite sports to cover, and definitely a team worth covering. Let's get into football. A lot of new stuff, especially when it comes to recruiting here for the Florida Gators. Before we do that, let's give a quick shout out to our friends over at Game Time Sidekicks. You're looking for the best cups in all of the land. A ton of different options for the Florida Gators. There's this one. I know Nick got a few. Really some of the best cups that you can imagine. Very fairly priced too. Don't think just because the price is a little bit less than some of the competition on the market that the quality is any worse. They are great products, great cups that you can find. You can get 15% off if you use promo code STADIUM15. Again, that's GameTimeSidekicks.com. Promo code STADIUM15 will get you 15% off of your order. Go check them out. Great owners, great people that want to support. And if it's not the University of Florida that you're looking for, maybe for a friend or family, they have dozens and dozens and dozens of different schools out there that you can get. So again, GameTimeSidekicks.com. Want to save yourself some money? Use promo code STADIUM15 at checkout if you want to support business and you don't have to use that code. Also, let's give a quick shout out to our friends over at Home Field Apparel. You know them. Best vintage shirts, softest cotton on the market right now. Go visit HomeFieldApparel.com. Promo code STADIUM and Gale at checkout will get you 15% off and free shipping off of that purchase. So again, that is homefieldapparel.com, promo code STADIUM and Gale at checkout. All right, Nick, your favorite subject to talk about, 17-year-olds and where they're going to college. The Gators did grab a tight end from Madison Central High School in Madison, Mississippi, Micah Jones. He is a 3-star composite player, 6'4", 250-pound tight end. The Gators grabbed him over the likes of Alabama, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, I may have already said this, in LSU, Alabama, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, and LSU. So the Gators grab him. He is the second tight end in this class. Nick, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I spent today.
Maybe he's the first. There's a second coming. Sorry. My apologies.
Spent today watching. Looks like he has a good hands, good receiver.
Yeah.
College ready size, 6'5", 250. I think he showed willingness as a blocker, not really, you know, asked to do a ton of that in high school. I think the biggest thing that I saw probably needs to clean up is route running and blocking. But young kid
kind of lumbers around a little bit. I noticed
just a junior,
not bad, right? But
no, not bad. It's a good pickup. And like I said, it's June.
It's a fine pickup. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not mad about it. I'm sure someone was mad about it.
No, there's some people that are, you know, were, I don't know, not more than, you know, screaming from the mountaintops necessarily. But, you know, I think that Florida right now, in terms of the way that they use the tight end position, Nick, let me know your thoughts here. I think that the way that they use the tight end position is probably not going to be something that attracts a ton of your top tier tight ends. I don't think the position's attractive. I, to be honest with you, I don't know what Mike Jones looks like. I'm sure he's a fine looking dude.
No, I mean you don't think the
I misconstrued your question. Yeah,
The production Florida's tight ends have had the last 2 years. People aren't, you know, the next Kyle Pitts is not like, hey man, that I would like to do that.
Well, I mean, Kyle Pitts was just a 3-star too, so maybe I'm all going to be wrong here. But no, I think that if you know the way that Florida uses the tight end position, you're going to do a lot of blocking. You're going to, you know, be asked to do a lot of the unsexy, you know, dirty work that a tight end is going to do. It's not going to be, you know, a fourth wide receiver on the field all the time.
Yeah. And at some point, I mean, listen, whatever Billy Napier and Ryan O'Hara and the coaching staff is selling to quarterbacks is working.
Right.
But at some point, everyone around you, and I do think that DJ Lagway, just hearing some of the guys talk about DJ Lagway, a guy who hasn't thrown a single pass in college or taken a single snap in college, hearing the way that freshmen are talking or juniors in high school are talking about Lagway, I think is crazy. But they want to come and play for him. I think that once you get a guy like that at quarterback that people want to come play for, you'll start getting some better offensive recruits. But Florida's offense hasn't, like, I guess they did kind of light some stuff on fire towards the end of last year, but they had to, because the defense was also running around with the flamethrower.
Right.
But it hasn't, it's not an offense that I look at if I'm, you know, a 5-star tight end, 5-star receiver, then I'm like, that looks fun. Let's go do that for 3 years.
And I feel like tight end, you know, certainly you have your generational, your super top tier talent, but tight end is usually a position that I feel like takes a little bit of time for some of these guys to get developed. And, you know, it's often the names of your 3-stars, maybe your low 4-star guys that end up being, you know, bigger producers, you know, at the next level. I feel like offensive line, tight end or harder positions to evaluate, especially because a lot of teams, especially in high school, don't use the tight end in a pretty traditional way. You know, often they're going to be your next catcher, or be a next receiver that's maybe a little bit bigger, a guy that can shed some blocking. And every once in a while, you get that tight end that just continues to grow in size and maybe moves to a tackle position or somewhere on the offensive line. So we'll see there. But, you know, again, not a get that I'm mad at or upset about. Anytime that you can get a guy that's 6'4", 6'5", 250 pounds, certainly have a lot of opportunity for him. Right now, he is the 6th player in this class. So to confirm what this class looks like right now, it's Jalen Wiggins, 4-star, Waltez Clark, a 4-star running back, Jeremiah McLeod, a 3-star defensive lineman, a 3-star tight end, and Micah Jones, a 3-star running back, and Chad Gasper, and then a 3-star on three, but a 5-star on Cole's kicking and a 5-star in our hearts, Hayden Craig. Is a part of this class right now. But it does seem like the tide might be changing here pretty soon, Nick. The Gators have gotten a number of RPM picks thrown their way. So let's go over what those look like, because it's been on a bit of a heater over the last couple of days. All right, so first name that we'll go over is 4-star wide receiver, 6'3", 205 pounds, Joshua Moore. He is ranked as the 198th overall player in the country on the On3 industry rankings, but On3 has him ranked as the 57th best player and the number 9 overall wide receiver in the country. Number of RPM picks came in from Pembroke Pines, Florida and West Broward High School to join this class. Right now, offers from Miami, Florida State, Ohio State, LSU, and the like. Nick, it looks like that one might be ending here pretty soon. Might be the next one.
Hello. First time podcasting. Muted myself again.
Yeah.
I think the last month, Florida had those big three recruiting weekends. The calendars kind of changed where people want to get it done before their senior year.
Yep.
No one's ever had a bad recruiting visit. I did some of those interviews for Corey and Keith, and everyone loved Florida. And then I have like Twitter notifications set for Hayes Fawcett, so I don't miss a commitment.
I wish I could, Nick. Still blocked.
So a company man. I'm a company man. So I have I just keep getting notifications like, hey, 4-star quarterback Jaden O'Neal, 26, committed to Oklahoma. My phone just pops up every day with Alabama, LSU, Ohio State, Texas. And I'm just like, haven't seen a Florida one in a while.
Well, Nick, I think some of that should be changing here pretty soon. Joshua Moore is definitely a guy that I would put on commit watch over the next day or two. Here, you'll notice a theme here. So Joshua Moore, the wide receiver, 6'3", 205 pounds from West Broward. We've talked about him. A lot of other picks have come in from Vernell Brown, the third wide receiver, 5'10.5", 173 pounds from Jones High School. Obviously comes from a double legacy of Florida Gator players himself. Right now, the recruiting prediction machine has him at 77.5% going to Florida. That's over Ohio State. That's over Florida State, and that's over Miami as well. Was listening to a couple of different podcasts. Doesn't seem like Ohio State is much in the mix anymore, and it seems like Florida has separated themselves from Miami to be able to nab his commitment. The number 35 overall player in the country, the number 6 wide receiver, and the number 5 overall player in the Florida. Nick, this is a must get. We talked about it a couple of months ago. We don't talk a ton of recruiting on the show. We talked a few months ago that's a guy you have to go get. Vernell Brown the third, hopefully here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, legacy. I thought it was really cool. I think we had a picture like that with Khalil Jackson a couple years ago, who's a double legacy. I think that's super cool to see three generations of people wearing that same jersey. Now, Vernell might not choose that jersey. I just saw he left his Florida State visit and said he thought Mike Norvell was his favorite head coach. Don't love to hear that if you're a Florida fan. But yeah, the number 35 prospect on our site, number 6 receiver, number 5 in the state of Florida. Florida has been trending in our RPM picks. He has, like we just said, a bunch of connections to Florida. I think Corey included him in his mock class in May and put an RPM pick in for him. This is one that
you got to get.
Yeah.
Get Clareton. Florida needs to go get Vernell Brown the third.
Yeah. This is, I get it. If he wants to create his own legacy and go somewhere else and do it, I get that. If you don't want to, you know, go to the same place your dad did, but like as a Florida fans, that's a tough one to lose because of that lineage and that history. And he's a solid player. I think comes in and helps you right away.
Is his dad still doing work with Anthony Richardson?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So. That's a name that Florida fans have wanted, have been clamoring for. He was at FSU. You know, sometimes you just say nice things after this visit, Nick. I mean, we just talked about it. Yep. Mike Norvell is my favorite coach, whatever, you know, and then you go play for Billy Napier and then whoever follows Billy Napier. So the last, and again, you'll notice the trend here is Nashawn Montgomery, wide receiver from Miami Central High School. Says his hometown's West Palm Beach, so hopefully he's not making the commute down each and every day. Class of 2025, 6'1", 165 pounds. Probably need to throw a little bit of muscle or some weight on those bones. But right now, the 243rd overall player in the country, number 35 wide receiver on the On3 industry rankings. Interesting here, Rivals has him ranked as the 63rd best player in the country. ESPN has him ranked as the 91st player in the country, 7th overall receiver. On3 and 247, not yet ranked. But right now it looks like Florida over Miami, Penn State, and LSU. I think Penn State was the one that you needed to look out for here, Nick. So, again, another name we talked about on the show, wanting to go into your Broward County, your Miami-Dade County, and I guess his hometown's West Palm. So that Tri-County area down there to go get some dogs at the receiver position. Gators have gotten two players, I think, in the last 6 years from Miami, one right now on the roster in Andy Jean. So go get me some guys from the 305.
Yeah, Montgomery, I think, likes Penn State. That's the school of Florida I think is really going up against. The Gators want to sign four receivers in this cycle, and I think Montgomery's in their top four on their board. And based on what Keith and Corey have written, it doesn't seem that he's in the top four for Penn State. So he might have gone up and liked it, but it's tough to go to a place where you want to go more than they want you to come.
Yeah, been in relationships like that.
You get Joshua Moore, Vernell Brown, Nashawn Montgomery. I think that's a really solid three receivers for this class, and we'll see where it ends up and who that fourth will be, or if maybe you get five. But yeah, I think probably just because knowing his dad, Vernell is the one. VB3 is the one that I've been paying most attention to. But I think Nashawn Montgomery is. Can you explain to me that migration, Dan?
It's not even. I don't know. Unless he's on the SunRail down each and every day, we'll probably need to do a little bit more research. We'll send our 305 correspondent Corey down to find out if Nashawn Montgomery is in fact commuting from West Palm Beach to Miami Central High School each and every day. I have a feeling that they've worked out an arrangement.
Oh, well, you can have NIL now. Maybe he is sponsored by Brightline.
You can actually get NIL now, and I know that there's a number of agencies spinning up, so there's going to be a lot more shenanigans, is from what I heard from a buddy of mine that's a quarterback coach, about what's going to potentially be happening with
shenanigans have been afoot.
The shenanigans are afoot. Shenanigans are afoot.
Shenanigans have always been afoot. I had a buddy who played for Flanagan High School baseball player. He lived in Miami. Not Flanagan. Not Pembroke Pines.
I think
the male that went to Pembroke Pines.
I think that only a show without Corey could we say shenanigans are afoot. You know what I mean? It's a slightly different vibe on the show.
We will say shenanigans are afoot right in Corey's face.
That's right. So Nashawn Montgomery. So again, that is what you're seeing from the recruiting prediction machine. Nashawn Montgomery, Vernell Brown, the third, and Joshua Moore. A lot of excitement and energy being pushed towards that. The Gators definitely needed to go and get some names at the wide receiver position after we'll say not lackluster, but definitely not what we maybe anticipated last year. In terms of commitments at the wide receiver position. So we will wait to see on that. Cornerback Ben Hanks is also a name that you might want to know. Miles Johnson, just looking at some other guys here that Florida's sitting in a good position for. And, you know, I think we're going to stop there because there's not a lot right now. Definitely need to see some more excitement, some more energy out of the Gators recruiting department, especially as we know that recruiting, that cycle does seem to end a little bit earlier now. I do want to give a note. The Gators did host two players from Port Charlotte last weekend. There's 2025 defensive lineman, four-star Myron Charles, who was on campus, and then 2027 quarterback recruit Logan Flaherty. Logan Flaherty, my buddy, is his quarterback coach. He got offered by Tulane, soon to get offered by Pitt and Penn State and Louisville. A number of schools are after him. I know that he's being heavily recruited right now by Ryan O'Hara, so that's definitely a name for the class of 2027, which just makes me feel so old when I say that year, but the class of 2027 right there. So Nick, any other thoughts on recruiting before we get into a little bit of baseball? or a little bit of football?
No, but John Wilcox has got me thinking that Corey's not here. I should really start hyping up Gus Malzahn's team. Not today.
We are going to get into, in the month of July, breaking down some of these teams. We're going to get some beat writers on. We've got a lot of exciting guests here in the future. I know Mouse Holloway is going to be coming on, working on a few other, surprise names and surprise guests here in the next couple of weeks. So stay tuned for that. That's always our fun time of the year to be able to go through. Nick, I want to talk about Jordan Castell real quick. PFF ranked him as the SEC's highest graded returning safety. The ninth highest graded returning safety in the SEC this year. Nick, your thoughts on him? We're going to run through the list of players that that made the PFF's list here. But what do you think, Jordan Castell?
Yeah, I think there were times like watching games. I think he's a really good player. You're asking a freshman to do a lot to play safety right away. And I think that led to some missed coverages, some missed tackles, some bad angles, stuff like that. But I think he's a good player, and he'll be better for having played as much his freshman year. He'll be better for his sophomore year. So, yeah, I get it. You can look at Jordan Castell and think, I think right away it was – great, great, great. And then as the season goes on, you start to see like, okay, maybe he's also getting tired. It's a longer season, longer calendar for him than he's ever had before in terms of football. But yeah, I think I've sharpied him in as a starter next to Asa Turner. I've sharpied him in even before Asa Turner was on campus. And it was always like Florida's looking to get somebody to start next to Jordan Castell.
Yeah, Harrison from his chateau mentioned that Jordan Castell did also tear his labrum in week six. So obviously also playing injured last season as well, full off season, another full strength and conditioning program that he has under his belt. So excited to see him and what he might be able to do. So Nick, I want to play a little game with you. So PFF has ranked nine players in the top 10 in the SEC at their position. Those names are Graham Mertz, Eugene Wilson, Elijah Badger, Jake Slaughter, Austin Barber, Brandon Crenshaw Dixon, Devin Manuel, and Joey Slackman. Nick, of that list of people, and I can name that list again, who do you think will be ranked higher than maybe where they are now? Who do you think is going to be at the top of that list at the end of the season, according to PFF? You're on mute again, my friend.
First time, long time. I think one is Eugene Wilson. I think he's been kind of left off of some things. I think Eugene Wilson will end up very high. Just the usage, his talent and the usage. Going to one of Billy Napier's speaking tours, he was like, listen, Eugene Wilson's going to be tired after football games. I can assure you of that. Elijah Badger is a guy I think could be that if he's healthy and can stay healthy. PFF loves Jake Slaughter. I think he'll probably just stay where he is, but they absolutely love Jake Slaughter. I kind of think that's it. I'm not super high on Crenshaw Dixon, Devin Manuel. I really like Joey Slackman. I just don't know that I don't think he's going to start. But I think you're two deep, at that position. So you're only going to get maybe 25 snaps from those guys a game, which is good because you can play harder 25 snaps than you can if you're playing 68 snaps at 330 pounds. So I would say Eugene Wilson, Elijah Badger, Jake Slaughter maybe goes up, but I think Florida or PFF has had him like consistently in like their top three returning interior linemen.
Any names left off the list, Nick? And again, I can run through that list if you want. Any names left off the list that you think will be in the top 10 going in to the end of the season?
No, I don't think so. Cause I don't think Montrell will. I think we're going to get exactly from Montrell what he's done his first 3 years. He's going to get like 800 yards and 8 to 10 touchdowns, which is a very productive year. But I don't think that puts you in the top 10 when you got guys running for, 12, 13, 14, 1,700 yards of places.
Well, they, again, this is PFF rankings, not just on total yards or number of tackles or interceptions. So this is in the games that they played, you know, doing their positional duties.
Yeah, I don't think.
No, you're still no. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah. Shamar James.
Maybe a Shamar James. Maybe
a Shamar James. Asa Turner.
No, I think maybe a Shamar James.
You have the defensive backs.
Yep.
Jackson, no. Nick is selling. No wonder why you're picking UCF to beat Florida on this year
podcast. I don't think UCF's going to have any of those guys either.
Well, no, because they're not in the SEC, and these are SEC rankings, not college football rankings. You know what I mean? You understand where if they were like Big 12 rankings, Florida also wouldn't have any in the Big 12.
Shout out to
understanding what PFF is saying in these
Big
numbers.
12,
so with that being said, Nick, of any of these players that were not mentioned in the SEC, you're still in no. I just want to put this on camera. Maybe we get a short or a reel about it so that we can revisit in the future. We're going to do a lot of revisiting now that we're splicing stuff up here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, fake news. A lot of splicing and taking out of context.
I don't think we'll be taking out of context. Nick, I need to definitively know that you don't have anybody else. Pop Howard, maybe. Najee Harris.
No, I've got Graham Mertz, Eugene Wilson, Elijah Badger, Jake Slaughter.
That's it. Okay, just four. So of all of the nine, five will drop out. Florida has four. Florida, according to what George was asking, Florida will not win five games if it's just those four. We'll hope for something different, but that's tough news for Gator fans. No one will be accountable.
I mean, Devin Manuel, they have him in there. He's like Florida's fourth tackle. It's like, what are we doing? What are we doing here? He's not even the backup tackle. And they're like, he's going to be a top 10 player in his position.
We got depth at the offensive line.
He's not going to be a top 10 player at his position in the league when he's not top three on his team.
I don't make the rankings, Nick. I just report what's on these graphics here. Nick, what's going on in football? We're just in a bit of a stalemate in terms of time. We got Summer B starting here pretty soon, so the rest of the students will probably be on campus. Your traffic is about to get a hell of a lot worse, not quite as bad as it'll be for the fall. But any football news that you want to report, Nick? I don't think that there's a ton.
No, they're just working out right now. I haven't any reports like the PFPs or PF.
Yes.
Player run practices. Oh, player run PRPs, the perps. OTAs, I guess they call them. The perps. Don't do that. hands up. I think those are going well because you have a veteran. You have a lot of veterans on this team. Guys who have been here, you know, last year, Cam Jackson, Caleb Banks are new. They don't really know that they can or feel that they have the place to take a hold of that locker room and run things. Tyreek Sapp's been at Florida for 4 years. You have a lot of veterans on the defensive side of the ball. Jason Marshall, I think, is doing a better job of speaking up and being a leader. It's just not his personality. It's not a knock on him. Just some guys, that's not their personality.
Aren't those guys? Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a veteran team with a lot of young talent. And I think those veterans are stepping up now when they need to, because the coaches are limited to what they can do on grass. So I think that's going well for Florida, and it's just the workout program. I wrote a bunch about Tyler Miles and Jake Sankle with the strength, conditioning, and nutrition program. And one thing I did here is Aaron Childs came ready to play.
Nice.
And then the other one was
he came for Summer A, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he broke, or not broke a record, but they keep track of a bunch of different metrics, statistics, your bench, squat, clean, 40, 10-yard split, all this kind of stuff. And he was leading the group of outside linebackers in a couple of those within his first week of getting there, which is really impressive for
– Impressive or concerning for the rest?
That's it. Listen, I don't know if your glass is half full or if
I'm
empty.
Always half full. Well, yours is empty.
Yeah, it's impressive. It sounds like I have a drinking problem, Dan.
Sure.
I'm really encouraged.
Nick, call for help.
I think that's encouraging. But listen, everything is encouraging right now. Everyone's 0-0. And all we're doing is lifting weights. And they're young, strong football players. They lift weights for fun.
All right. Well, that I think kind of just wraps up where we're at football season. Nick, you wrote an article. I want to visit this topic. J.D. Pickell, right? Pickell, probably. On three. What?
J.D. Pickell.
J.D. Pickell, yeah. He mentioned on his show that the Florida and Miami game is the most important game on Florida's roster. Paul Feinbaum agrees. Nick, your thoughts?
I think it is and it isn't.
That's not an answer. So,
it is because, like Dan, you and I, we are 35, 36.
Yep.
Florida has played Miami 7 times in our lifetime.
Okay.
And this used to be an every single year game. And we kind of have to learn the rivalry, or at least I did, through my parents who went to Florida, because it used to be an every year thing. And going right back and watching some stuff, like Florida's throwing oranges at Miami as they're kicking like a field goal late in a game that they were winning, throwing oranges at their sideline.
You got the
Gator flop. Hell yeah. You got the Gator flop in, I think, 71, so John Reeves could break Jim Plunkett's record. Florida, and there's bragging rights in the state of Florida, and because you don't get this game every year, those bragging rights continue until the next game. Florida will play Miami again next year, but with the way the schedule is going, when will be the next time that Florida and Miami play? After
next year.
After next year.
Oh, okay. Do you think that that's a game that, like, maybe we've seen the last of for a while?
I don't know. I don't know. Like, if
well, Scott, it's your opportunity to opine, Nick.
Scott Strickland already said, like, if they knew that UCF would be in the Big 12, they probably wouldn't have scheduled UCF. Now you have a situation where Florida has 11 of their 12 games this year against Power 5 teams. And maybe you might go to all 12 games being Power 5. I think you're going to go to 9 SEC games, which eliminates a week that you could add another Miami game. So, yeah, I think this could be – these next 2 years could be the last time we see Florida-Miami outside of a bowl game or a playoff.
Or when Miami's in the AAC in a few years, when the ACC collapse.
In the AAC. That's a tough fall.
No, I mean, let me ask you. You said something it's interesting. When Florida scheduled UCF, they were a member of the AAC. Now they're a Big 12 team. What's changed?
I'm just saying they would have scheduled a non-Power 5 team.
But, I mean, they were still a team that consistently made bowls, right? They were still a pretty good team. When Florida scheduled them, it's not like they scheduled them right after they went 0-12, right? Or the 3-9. I mean, they're still a good team. I don't know if I buy into that. Anyway, long story short, I think with the way that the college conferences are going anyway, that you're going to have your two major conferences. You're going to have some smaller ones. Heck, you might even have a split off of some of these teams completely from college football, or the way that you play them. So I think that you're more than likely going to get a 12 team Power 2, Power 3, whatever it all shakes out to be in the next few years. I don't know if Florida needs to play Miami every year, but I would like to see it be a game that they play, you know, once or twice, maybe a home and home in decade. Just seems too close to just be able to kind of kick it to the curb, especially knowing their history there. Maybe it doesn't mean anything anymore. Maybe the same way that the Auburn series with Florida used to be big and then it just kind of dwindled away. Maybe that's what happens. But I think there's a little bit too much in terms of the rise of Miami, the rise of Florida, the rise of Florida State, all at around a similar time in terms of their impact in college football, to just kind of let that one stray away. But
definitely, so that's why I think it is. Also, good luck selling hope the rest of the year, Dan. Like, what kind of momentum are you carrying into week two Samford? So mm-hmm. you shouldn't need momentum, but they scored 50 the last time they were here.
Well, they did.
But good luck selling that hope. Like, you need to November. There's not a lot of wins in November. There just isn't. You need to get wins early, and starting off 0-1 is tough. So I think you need to get that home win against Miami. Florida's been really good at home. Miami has a bunch of, including Cam Ward, who I think is a good player, but a bunch of transfers who are going to be playing in what should be a really hostile environment in the Swamp. To me, it's a game that Florida has to win. But also, I don't know that it's the biggest game. Like, Florida is 2-10 away from Gainesville. Go up to Tennessee and get a win. Like, right. show us you can be competent on the road, which you have yet to show. Beat Kentucky. My goodness. If Florida loses to Kentucky, an entire four-year graduating senior class will go without beating Kentucky, which hasn't happened since the 30s, late 30s into the 40s.
Oof.
Like, there's other games. Miami, as you pointed out, is in the ACC, maybe AAC later, maybe SoCon. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
Maybe they'll rent a conference like they rent the stadium. But it's not an SEC game. And Florida's not going to win the SEC this year. But those SEC games, I think, are more important. So for the rivalry standpoint, for the where it comes in the season, being the first game, I think – getting off the season off to a good start is necessary because the back end is like a backloaded baseball contract.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yes, it is important for the rivalry. Yes, it is important for momentum. But in terms of the game, no, I'm way more interested in Florida, Tennessee. I'm way more interested in Florida, LSU, Florida, Kentucky, mm-hmm. Florida. I'm Ole interested Miss. In Texas yeah. Just to go to Austin. So that's a selfish reason, but I don't think that's a game Florida wins. Sure. But yeah, so that's why I say it is and it isn't. Yep. So really, the only reason I say it is just for intangible reasons.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it on this podcast, right? I mean, Florida is doing some things better, right? As a program, they seem to be recruiting a little bit better than they were. There's some organizational improvements. There's some organizational deficiencies. There's some things that you can be excited about on the field. There's some things that you can be disappointed about on the field. But at the end of the day, Billy Napier and his tenure here at Florida is defined by what he can do in that wins and losses column. Right now. And so I think that that's a huge win. I don't know if it's most important. I think every game is the most important for Billy Napier right now. Obviously you can take out a few of those games and, you know, in that Florida should win those games, but I think every game is the most important for Billy Napier to be able to prove that he's worthy of another season. Right. And there's a lot of reason to be optimistic about some of the things in Florida's program right now. But I think, you know, the point is I do think it's the most important game in Florida's calendar now, right? And what happens then will dictate their success, I think, into the momentum of the Samford game and then moving on down the schedule. But Florida doesn't have, like you said, Nick, a lot of, you don't have your Vanderbilts, you don't have numerous different, you know, FCS schools or low division FBS schools on the calendar this year. So what they need to do is they need to show that even if Florida loses that game, that it's not the end of the world, but Florida has to lose that game by playing well, right? You can take a loss and it not be a indignation of indication of what your season is going to look like. But I think that that game is going to be huge to show what has this team been doing since last November when they last played a game. And is this a team that looks like they can be competitive on the field? Right. So I am going to say that in the vacuum of the question, it is Florida's most important game of the season right now. Just because I think it's going to show what this team is. My opinion, you're a hell of a lot lucky to get Miami first game of the season than you are probably seventh or eighth game of the season. If Florida loses this game, doesn't mean that they're going to go 4 wins, 5 wins. No, not necessarily. But I think it's a hell of a lot more likely if Florida loses that game that they win 4 or 5 games on the season than if they win that game and they only win 4 or 5 games. Because I think that Miami's got a pretty good team. I don't think that they are, you know, necessarily a top 10, top 15 team, but I think that they've got some talent on that roster. They went in the transfer portal. They got some guys. Yes, Mario Cristobal is still the head coach there, and that's going to yield probably a couple of bad plays. But I think at the end of the day, you look at that game and says, hey, you know, Florida wants to be a team with a winning record this year, make it to bowl season, and ultimately put themselves in a position to start building and have those building blocks that they need to ultimately become the team that competes for national championships, but at least SEC East championships and then SEC championships.
There is no more SEC beyond.
Whatever the separation of however we're doing things, just top two teams in the SEC then, Nick. I completely forgot. We're not doing pods either, so we just got two best teams for now. That might change in the near future or in the future ahead. So I that's where we're at.
What? I doubt that the – I believe that you're an outlier in that, Dan, that you'll be fine if Florida loses that game as long as they lose it while playing – well, by playing good football.
No, I didn't say I'd be. I mean, at the end of the day, Nick, I got to be okay with wins and losses because my career doesn't rely on them winning or losing, right? My life is very fine, very, very happy when Florida is winning and Florida's losing. It's unfortunate, but it's part of growing up, I think, in separating what I can do as a fan and what I can do on this podcast and be able to attach emotions to that team. What I can say, though, is watching that game, I will feel better, more empowered, have more passion on this podcast. If even if Florida does lose, they look good doing it, then I have more hope coming into that following Monday.
I think if Florida beats Miami, you shoot a 79 on Monday, not Sunday, because I believe that there will be some nursing of a hangover on Sunday. But Monday, I think you go out to the links and you fire a 79.
I could.
78.
Who knows? 77. Right?
71.
The difference between my 80s that I've gotten and shooting par is just 8 better shots.
That's it.
I mean, that's not it. It's not that bad, right? That's like 1 in 10 shots, right? 1 in 9 shots. I think I should do that.
Should be like 10% better.
That's it. That's all you need to do. That's all you need to do. Nick, any final thoughts before we get out of here? I know you got to see Shanty waiting for us. We got one more ad read. Any other topics you want to cover before we get out of here? Thanks, everybody, for watching. Corey's stuck in Orlando traffic. We found out that's what it was.
Orlando's awful. Orlando's awful. Traffic's awful. I liked living in Orlando, but the traffic was terrible.
Any final thoughts?
I got nothing else.
Okay, perfect.
See Shanty up.
We appreciate everybody watching. Make sure you hit that like button, hit the subscribe button, share this with your friends and family. Share this with a Florida State fan that wants you wants to hear that they finished 4th in college baseball this year and not 3rd. With that being said, go visit our friends over at Alumni Hall. Go visit them in Gainesville when you're in town on Archer Road, right near the Chick-fil-A, or go visit them online, alumnihall.com. Best in Gators clothes, apparel, accessories, polo shirts, coaches, garb that they wear. Bunch of new stuff's going to probably be hitting the shelves here in the not too distant future as Nike and Jordan and the rest of them start to release their 2024 season apparel. They will have it first. They will have the most option for you. So go check them out. My favorite store to buy Florida Gators gear, Alumni Hall in Gainesville on Archer Road or alumnihall.com. Nick, see Shanty time.
This was, I can't remember who the player was, but okay. It was the other side of, or actually it was at Clemson. And the NCAA allowed walk-up songs this year. And this was one of Clemson's players' walk-up songs. It was electric. Okay. It got the people going. It is called Rattlin' Bog by Carlisle Frazier.
Oh, my gosh. I know this song.
It's a great song.
Oh, the Rattlin' Bog, the bug down in the valley. Oh. That's, yeah.
Less of a sea shanty, just more of an Irish jig.
Yeah, no, I don't think – definitely not a sea shanty, an Irish jig. You can hear that song at any Irish bar any day of the week, especially on St. Paddy's Day. That is a fun song, Nick. There's a whole dance to it and everything, so maybe you can learn that next week. You do that for the followers. I'm sorry?
I said a live performance next week. Yes, I did please. Want to shout out Post Malone announced his album, F1 Trillion.
Yes.
Country album.
Yep.
I had such high expectations for I Had Some Help. I think the marketing for that, they did a great job. But I think his new song with Blake Shelton, Pour Me a Drink, better than the first single from the
album. Oh my gosh, it is absolutely eons better than
Pour Me a Drink's a great song. Wallen.
Yeah, no, I really got down to Pour Me a Drink. It's a great song. Just came out. Big Post Malone fan, always have been. One of the best concerts I've ever been to, actually. Kind of got there, kind of last second, no real plans to go. Blew me away. There's not a lot of concerts that I've been to that, you know, they're just so different than you expect. Post Malone was absolutely incredible as a musician, as an artist, performer. He's changed a lot since when I've seen him. I think he's about 70 pounds lighter. Doesn't do all the same things that he was doing then, but an incredible performer. That one and the Foo Fighters were the two concerts that just really surprised me the most. Went in with not a lot of expectation, up or down, positive or negative, right? Just went and just incredible concert. So if you can go see them. But Post Malone is going to have a whole new country album coming out. A lot of people on there. But Pour Me a Drink's a good one. So, but we'll play Rattlin' Bog as we take us out of here. We appreciate everybody for watching. Make sure you visit our sponsors, Home Field Apparel, promo code Stadium and Gale, Game Time Sidekicks, promo code Stadium 15, and Alumni Hall when you can. Appreciate everybody for watching. We'll see you next week. Corey will be here, and he apologized for missing today. See you guys next week.
Oh, the Rattlin' Bog, the bug down in the valley, oh. Rare bug, the Rattlin' Bog, the bug down in the valley, oh.
And in that bog there was a hole, a rare hole, a rattling hole,
with a hole in the bog and the bug down in the valley, oh. Oh, the Rattlin' Bog, the bug down in the valley, oh. And the tree and the tree and the hole and the hole in the bog and the bog down in the valley, oh. Oh, the Rattlin' Bog, the bog down in the valley, oh. Rare bog, the Rattlin' Bog, the bog down in the valley, oh.
Now on that branch there was a limb, rare limb, a rattling limb.
The limb and the branch and the tree and the tree and the hole and the hole in the bog and the bog down in the valley, oh. Oh, the Rattlin' Bog, the bog down in the valley, oh. Rare bog, the Rattlin' Bog, the bog down in the valley, oh.
Limb there was a nest, rare nest, a rattling nest.
A nest in the limb and the limb and the branch and the branch and the tree and the tree and the hole and the hole in the bog and the bog down in the valley, oh. Oh, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley, oh. Rare bog, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley, oh.
Now on that nest there was a bird, rare bird, a rattling bird.
And the nest and the limb and the limb and the branch and the branch and the tree and the tree and the hole and the bog and the bog and the bog down in the valley, oh. Oh, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley, oh. Bear bog, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley, oh.
Now in that bird there was an egg,
and the nest and the limb and the branch and the branch and the tree and the tree and the hole and the hole and the bog down in the valley, oh. Oh, oh, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley, oh. Rare bog, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley, oh.
Now in that egg there was a bird, rare bird, a rattling bird.
The bird and the egg and the egg and the bird and the bird and the nest and the nest and the limb and the limb and the branch and the branch and the tree and the tree and the hole and the hole and the bog down in the valley, oh. Oh, the rattling bog, down in the valley, oh. Rare bog, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley, oh.
Now on that bird there was a feather, rare feather, a rattling feather.
The feather and the bird and the bird and the egg and the egg and the bird and the bird and the nest and the nest and the limb and the limb and the branch and the branch and the tree and the tree and the hole and the hole and the bog down in the valley, oh. Oh, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley, oh. Rare bog, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley, oh.
Feather there was a worm, rare worm, a rattling worm.
The worm and the feather and the feather and the bird and the bird and the egg and the egg and the bird and the bird and the nest and the nest and the limb and the limb and the branch and the branch and the tree and the tree and the hole and the hole and the bog down in the valley, oh. Oh, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley, oh. Rare bog, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley, oh.
Now on that worm there was a hare, rare hare, a rattling hare.
And the feather and the bird and the bird and the egg and the egg and the bird and the bird and the nest and the nest and the limb and the limb and the branch and the branch and the tree and the tree and the hole and the hole and the bog down in the valley, oh. Oh, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley, oh. Rare bog, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley, oh.
Now on that hare there was a louse, rare louse, a rattling louse.
A louse and a hare and a hare and a worm and a worm and the feather and the feather and the bird and the bird and the egg and the egg and the bird and the bird and the nest and the nest and the limb and the limb and the branch and the branch and the tree and the tree and the hole and the hole and the bog down in the valley. Oh, 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 the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley. Oh, rare bog, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley. Oh.
That louse there was a tick, a rare tick, a rattling tick.
Tick and the louse and the louse and the hare and the hare and the worm and the worm and the feather and the feather and the bird and the bird and the egg and the egg and the bird and the bird and the nest and the nest and the limb and the limb and the branch and the branch and the tree and the tree and the hole and the hole and the bog down in the valley. Oh, oh, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley. Oh, rare bog, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley. Oh,
now on that tick there was a rash, rare rash, a rattling rash.
Rash and the tick and the tick and the louse and the louse and the hare and the hare and the worm and the worm and the feather and the feather and the bird and the bird and the egg and the egg and the bird and the bird and the nest and the nest and the limb and the limb and the branch and the branch and the tree and the tree and the hole and the hole and the bog down in the valley. Oh, oh, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley. Oh, rare bog, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley. Oh.